Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
About 7 minutes after the hour of 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program 173 in the series. It's April 22nd, and we have some classic radio shows, Lisa.
Well, that's novel, Carl.
Yeah. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa,
hey,
my co-host?
Carl.
And I haven't seen you, well, I guess I haven't seen you in about a week. That's a long time, Lisa.
Didn't I see you this week?
I don't
for
know.
Something?
It seems like maybe. And then we have Shante Garth, our producer, in the booth. And we have Dragnet tonight. We have The Life of Riley and then X Minus One. Three great classic radio shows, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Orville, which follows the crew of the exploratory ship Orville 300 years in the future.
Yeah, Orville Redenbacher?
Yes, something
maybe
like
it's
that.
Him.
Could be.
All right.
And the winner gets a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's Home of Chicago's Best
Deep Dish Pizza. Okay, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor is the voice of Peter Griffith.
Relax, Quagmire. You're doing better than Peter Weller from the opening scene of RoboCop.
All right. Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Relax, Quagmire. You're doing better than Peter Weller from the opening scene of RoboCop.
I said this was the voice of Peter Griffith. I meant Peter Griffin.
You got Andy Griffith.
I have Andy
and
Griffith.
Peter Griffin.
Yeah. Andy.
We've got Carrie on the line. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
How are you? Or good night. Or
evening. Whatever.
We don't mind.
Yeah.
It feels like early morning already. Carrie,
yep.
Who is that? Who is that?
I believe it's Seth MacFarlane.
That is Seth MacFarlane. You are absolutely right, and you are a winner. Carl's all excited. Yay! You've won a Lou Malnati's
Carrie got it, even though I gave him the wrong clue.
I know, right? And we didn't even mention that was Family Guy.
We have
Guy.
The smartest listeners in all of radio.
Did you just recognize Family Guy right from the get-go there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So you, Lou Malnati's Home of Chicago's Best Deep Dish Pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnati's.com. And, of course, you've won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's. And congratulations, and thank you so much for calling in.
Awesome. Thank
hey,
you, guys.
Hey, Carrie.
Take care. What?
Don't forget, Carrie, we are going to be tomorrow at Spin Chicago. So if you can, come out and meet us in person, please.
You know, I was thinking about that. I heard there's some ping pong or something going
ping
on.
Ping pong. You and I, we will play some ping pong together if you come out. Tomorrow, it's the big two-year anniversary here
we will
for
be
us.
There. So 6 to 9. We'd love anybody and everybody to come. We're going to serve food, and we're going to have some fun and just hang out.
Yeah, 344 North State Street, Spin Chicago, tomorrow, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Carrie, we'll see you there, buddy. All right, man. Take care and congrats.
Thanks.
Carrie's
bye
a big winner. He won a Lou Malnati's pizza, and we will have pizza as part of the appetizers, free appetizers. It's all free tomorrow. Everything's free. Appetizers, you get in free. You get a picture of us signed. We will give
that's
you
worth a lot. Too.
Twilight Zone CD. We'll bribe our listeners to come out. I will bribe the listeners if that's what it's going to take.
You bribe them. I'll just.
It's going to be
I'll
fun.
Just lay low.
It's going to
be
a lot
of fun.
Little ping pong. We're there 6 to 9 tomorrow. Hope you can come out for it. Some of my friends are coming out, Lisa. I have some. Yeah.
How many?
They're coming from...
You have all of your friends
yeah,
coming.
There's like four friends.
Like all four
all
of
four
them.
Of my friends are
I'm
coming.
I'm excited. Do I know your friends?
No.
Oh, good.
Probably don't.
Excellent.
Okay, it's time for Dragnet, one of the best radio shows and television shows of the golden age of radio and TV. It was a police procedural, came to radio in 1949. You ready for this, Lisa? It lasted from 1949 all the way to 1957. It's a long time.
It is.
That's nine seasons. And it was true crime stories of closed cases. Jack Webb, who played L.A. Police Detective Sergeant Joe Friday, was really the mastermind behind this whole thing. He was the star, he was the producer, he was the director. Each case was detailed from start to finish, and Friday narrated the action, and it had great sound effects. This was a show that was really dedicated to sound effects. They had five sound effects experts on every program. Other shows usually had like one or two sound effects experts. And, of course, it moved to television, and it ran 16 seasons on TV, and there were movies. Just a great series, one of the best. And we have an episode for you now from April 5th of 1955. This is called The Big Tooth, and it stars Jack Webb, part one of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call that a downtown hotel has been held up by a bandit who carries a sawed-off shotgun. Your job? Find him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Sunday, October 9th. It was cool in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss, Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 2:06 a.m. when we got to the corner of Cinnabar Street and Grand Avenue. The Brinton Hotel.
Well, I just done what he told me. I figured there was no point in getting myself all roiled up. Didn't see where that would be helping matters.
Yes, sir.
Whatever he said, I done it. Hey, you fellas looking for a room?
Police officers, this is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Are you from robbery?
That's right.
Roberts, 1F16.
Mm-hmm. You answered the call?
Yeah. The description's out. Metro's sending a couple of cars to help us look for the suspect.
All right, good.
Anything else I can do for you?
No, not right now.
Okay. I'll take care of the report.
Thank you. We'll check with you.
Right.
You know, I sure would have been wrong about you two.
What's that?
I never would have guessed you was cops.
Oh.
Salesman. That's what I'd put you boys down for.
I see.
Ladies ready to wear. Guess I would have missed the boat this time.
Yes, sir. Would you tell us about the holdup, please?
I thought them other officers already let you in on it.
We'd like to get the details from you if we could.
Oh. Well, I ain't got nothing better to do. Stuck here till 7 a.m. anyhow.
Wonder if we could have your name.
Boxer. Tom Boxer.
That's B-O-X-E-R?
That's it, you know, just like a dog. Uh-huh.
What time did the robbery take place?
Oh, 40, 45 minutes ago, along around 1:20, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't 1:30 yet, I'm sure of that.
Oh?
See, I was listening to the radio. Stan Swift.
Who's that?
You know Stan Swift. He's on every night, midnight till 6, 7 nights a week.
Oh, yeah.
The nights go swifter with Swift. That's how he puts it.
Uh-huh.
Gives a time signal every hour and every half hour. Remember him giving the 1 a.m.? Hadn't given the 1:30 yet, so it must have been around 1:20 when this fella come into the hotel.
What'd he do?
Walked up to the desk.
Yes, sir.
I didn't even know he was there. Well, not at first.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting down in that chair, kind of had my back away from the door.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hear him neither on account of being plugged in.
What was that?
To my radio.
Oh, I see.
This here gadget, see?
Mm-hmm.
It's into your ear, like so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I understand.
Let you listen without waking nobody up. Other end attaches to the set, like so.
Mm-hmm.
You mean that's a radio?
Sure is. You ain't never seen this kind before, huh?
No, sir.
Transistor.
Oh.
That's what they call it. Regency transistor. Ain't got no tubes. That's what makes it so small, you see? Carry it around in your pocket, if you have a mind to.
I see.
Real good tone, though. Plenty of volume, if you want to let it out.
Yes, sir. Now, if you'd just tell us about the robbery, would you, Mr. Boxer, please?
Well, ain't that what I've been doing?
Yes, sir. You said this man walked up to the desk?
That is right. Maybe stood there a couple of seconds before I sensed him.
Mm-hmm.
Unplugged myself, got up and asked him if he wanted a room. He said he did, single.
Yes, sir.
Checked the boxes to see what was vacant. Had my back to him while I was checking. Didn't notice him opening up his satchel.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been carrying the gun there, in the satchel. Anyway, when I turned around to register him, I found myself staring into the barrel. Shotgun it was.
All right, go ahead, please.
This is a stick-up, he said. Do what I tell you, and you won't get hurt. I didn't know whether he meant business or not, and I sure didn't aim to test him to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, I said. You just tell me what you want, and I'll do it.
Yeah.
I ain't no coward, you understand, but I ain't no hero neither, especially when I'm facing up to a shotgun.
Sure.
Like the man says, only real heroes are dead heroes.
Yes, sir.
Me, I just as soon go on living. That's why I done exactly what he told me. Give him the money from the cash drawer here. See? Every penny. Hand it all over to him. Didn't try to hold none back.
Yes, sir. How much was there?
$50, $60, somewhere in between there.
Mm-hmm. What happened then?
Well, he told me to empty my pockets, lay the stuff on the desk.
You did, huh?
I emptied them. I didn't have more than $3 or $4 in change. He scooped it up with the other money, shoved it into his satchel.
I see.
Then he said for me to come out from behind this desk, walk me over to the elevator, told me to get inside and ride up to the top floor. That'd be the third. You see, the hotel's 3 stories high.
Yes, sir, I understand.
I suppose I could have got off on number 2. He would have known the difference. Floor indicator down there don't work.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see where I'd be gaining anything by it, so I'd done what he told me. I rode up to 3.
How long did you wait there?
Oh, till I seen him leave the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
From the window end of the 3rd floor hall.
Did he drive away?
No, just strolled off. I don't think he had a car.
I see.
Turned the corner, and that was the last of him.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do then?
Took the elevator back down, called the police, listened to the radio while I was waiting.
Yes, sir.
Figured I might as well take it easy till the cops come. Wasn't more than 5 minutes before them officers walked in. A little while later, you fellas walked in. I guess you know when that was.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Boxer, could you tell us what he looked like?
Huh?
The man who held you.
Oh, well, I told them other fellas, the ones wearing uniforms, they said they'd send out his description.
Yes, sir, we understand. We'd like to have it, too.
Okay. Oh, young fella, 25 to 30, I judge.
No.
Big Bill, a little bigger than you.
Mm.
Not as big as you, though. Somewhere in between.
Yes, sir.
Black hair. Didn't catch the color of his eyes. Well, that's about all.
How was he dressed?
Suit. Stripe in it, I think. Maybe dark blue with a gray stripe. Bow tie. Kind of dapper.
Mm-hmm.
Have any scars?
Not where you'd notice them.
He said he carried the gun in a satchel, is that right?
Must have been where he had it. Didn't actually see him take it out, though. Back was to him at the time.
How big was the satchel?
Oh, medium-sized, about so long.
Any initials on it?
No, not so far as I can recall.
What about the gun? How big was it?
This long, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Single barrel, sawed off.
Could you tell the make?
Well, I ain't no expert on shotguns.
No.
Would you know this man if you saw him again?
Sure, I'd be a fool not to. Why?
I'd like to have you come down to City Hall in the morning, Mr. Boxer, if you would.
But what for?
I want to show you some photographs, see if you can pick them out.
You mean this morning?
Yes, sir, if you would.
It's Sunday.
Yes, sir, that's right.
You fellas work on Sunday?
Well, we're not the only one.
Well, what do you mean?
He did. Frank and I checked with the patrol officers who had answered Mr. Box's call. They told us that a search of the immediate vicinity had failed to turn up anyone who answered the suspect's description. 3:16 a.m., the crew from the crime lab finished up their investigation. There were no useful fingerprints or other physical evidence in the lobby of the hotel. 7:38 a.m., we checked the suspect's M.O. and the description with the stats office. They came up with 18 possibles. We pulled the packages from R&I and took them back to the office.
Well, looks like it might rain.
Pretty early in the season, isn't it?
Well, the paper says we're going to have a wet winter.
All right.
Real good for skiing, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what you need. Lots of moisture. Heavy snow.
You never go skiing.
No.
Well?
No, I thought about taking it up a couple of years ago. Faye blew her stack, though.
Mm.
Said I'd probably break my neck first time I tried.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think she worries more about me than she does about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, gents.
Oh, hi, sir.
Hope I haven't kept you waiting.
No, sir, not a bit. How are you today, Mr. Boxer?
Sleepy. Usually get a couple of hours catnap during my shift. Kind of missed out on it last night.
Yes, sir, I'm afraid you did.
Even after all you fellas left, somehow I just couldn't doze off. Listen to Stan Swift till 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I'll bet you I know more about Egypt than a real live Egyptian. Well, you got them pictures you wanted to show me?
Yes, sir, right over here.
It's all right if I sit down?
Yeah, go right ahead. There you are.
This the pile?
Yes, sir. Take your time. Look at each one as long as you like.
Okay. Hey, pretty tough bunch of boys.
Yeah.
No, it's not him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. Nope. Well, hey, wait a minute. There is a resemblance. He looks something like this one here.
Is it the same man, Mr. Boxer?
Oh, no, 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 not the same.
Yeah.
Similar type, though. Does that help you any?
Might. Want to go through the others?
Sure, sure. Now, you see this fella?
Yes, sir.
He's not the same type at all.
No.
The other one I pointed out was, you can see the difference yourself.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Not him. Not him either. Nope. Oh, now, this is closer to him.
Sir?
Not as close as that one, the other one, but closer.
Yes, sir.
Now we're getting further away. No, no, it's none of these. Is that all you got?
Afraid so.
Well, it's the best I can do for you. Now, this one here, the one I pointed out first.
Yeah, we understand, but it's not the same man, you see.
Well, I never said it was. Just said they were similar.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm sorry we wasted your time.
Oh, it wasn't no waste of time, not as far as I'm concerned.
Huh?
Remember my telling you about how I try to guess what different folks do for a living?
Yeah.
Looking at all these pictures will be a big help from now on.
How's that?
I'll know a crook when I see one.
All right, Lisa, that's the first portion of Dragnet, going back to 1955 with The Big Tooth starring Jack Webb. Let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
You are Lisa Wolf.
I am the Lisa.
I recognize you.
You do?
From your publicity photo that we'll be giving out tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
You look like the person in that photo.
Not my favorite photo, but we'll go
with
that.
You look great in that photo. It's touched up.
It's just...
What do they call that?
It's just too edited, I think.
What do you mean?
It's a little too edited.
What?
I don't know.
Are your dimples edited out?
Probably not.
You should see how deep Lisa's dimples are. She smiles
well,
so much that they're getting deeper.
Tomorrow.
I think they're getting deeper.
Do you? In old age?
I've known you now 9 or 10 years,
yeah.
And they've gotten deeper.
That's what happens when you get older. Everything gets exaggerated.
Smile. Always smile so much.
Yeah,
that's
well,
a good thing,
I'm going
to
stop smiling.
You know what? That's a good thing.
I will share
smiling
with our listeners what our first producer told me, that I shouldn't smile so much because that way when I talk, it sounds like I'm smiling. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was great advice.
Yeah,
actually.
I went with that.
You should just call him up every once in a while and ask him for life advice.
Yeah, he was.
Speaking of life
very
advice,
helpful for me.
Are you going to get your radio show where you give out advice? We're going to call it. We've decided.
I need an agent.
We've decided, Shante. What do you think of this name? We're going to call Lisa's advice show the Mars and Venus Show. What do you think of that? And she's Venus and I'm Mars. And people will call up and ask us life questions, mostly Lisa. I'm just going to kind of be the sidekick.
No,
I'll be the sidekick.
It's
you're
a good
the
combo.
Don't you have a degree in this?
Something like that.
She has so many degrees, I lose track.
I do too.
But it's going to be called should we call it the Venus and Mars Show? Because since you're Venus, you get top billing.
No, I think
billing.
We have to go with the book title. I mean, that's right. Just how it flows.
We're going
to
call it the Mars and Venus Show with Lisa Wolf and Carl. I don't want much billing on this.
I think this is, we've got something.
This
need
is
an agent.
Your show. We're going to put the spotlight on you, Lisa. It's
okay,
all about
I need somebody to represent me here.
You.
All about me.
It's all
I'm
about
good
you.
With that.
People will call up, ask. I'm telling you, folks, she is good at this.
Well,
I call
you are
her
needy.
All the time with my problems, and I have a lot of problems.
He does.
And I call she Lisa does. All the time, and she's got the right answers for me. She's really good.
You are at needy. This.
Lisa is very worldly.
Calm.
You're very worldly, Lisa.
Yeah, just keep calm. And
comes
like,
with
you know,
it comes with age.
Comes with age, I know, and maturity. And I have lots of that.
Yeah.
Lots of age and maturity.
You're pretty smart for only, 78?
18.
All right, let's get back to Dragnet.
On the following Sunday, October 16th, two more hotels were held up by a shotgun bandit. Both robberies occurred during the early morning hours. Both hotels were small. The description of the suspect and his M.O. indicated that he was the same man who had robbed the Brinton Hotel. Frank and I continued our investigation, but we failed to turn up any leads. During the next week, all hotels in the downtown area were alerted. Sunday, October 23rd, the night manager of the Schaefer Arms near the corner of Broadway and Clay reported that he had been robbed at approximately 3:30 a.m. He confirmed the bandit's description and M.O., but was unable to add anything new. The next morning, October 24th, we had a conference with Chief Brown.
Doesn't sound to me like you're any closer to him than we were 2 weeks ago. What do you got?
Well, not much.
Let's have it.
Description?
Pretty general, isn't it?
Afraid so.
What else?
Well, now he's only worked one area.
Yeah?
All the hotels are within a mile of Pershing Square.
Nothing to keep him from spreading out, is there?
So far, he hasn't used a car.
You figure he pulled these jobs on foot?
Looks that way.
Then he must live downtown somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anything about the hotels that might give us a tip-off on his next move?
Yeah, they're all small, only one person on duty.
Uh-huh.
We've marked all the possibles here in a map. You want to take a look at it?
Yeah.
Okay, right here. These are the ones he's already hit. Here, here, over here.
Tight little group?
Yeah. These circles indicate all the other hotels of a similar nature in the downtown area.
Uh-huh. Well, he works on Sundays, huh?
That's right.
What do you got planned for this Sunday?
Well, we'll stake out as many as we can. We've asked Metro to give us a hand. We figure we'll have enough men to cover about, 20 likelies, maybe.
We plan to run the stakes from midnight till 6 a.m. When he hits, it's usually between 2 and 4.
How's it sound to you?
About all we can do.
Yeah.
I want you both to stay on this between now and Sunday. See if you can't pick up a lead somewhere.
We will.
Informant's been able to give you anything?
Nope.
They holding out?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they know who he is.
Well, maybe the stakes will work.
Maybe.
Wait a minute. Let me see that map again.
It's here.
Funny. See here?
Yeah.
You said these are the places he's already robbed?
That's right.
All right together. Draw a line from one to the other and you'd have a square.
Yeah.
What's this right in the middle of the square?
That's the Argus Hotel on South Broadway.
That's one he hasn't hit yet.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like your best bet, then.
Yeah, that's the way we figured it.
Who's going to cover it Sunday?
Well, Smith and I thought we'd take it.
That's a coincidence.
Hmm?
Just who I was going to suggest.
During the rest of the week, we continued our investigation, but we failed to turn up any additional information about the suspect. A few minutes before midnight on Saturday, October 29th, men from Metro and Robbery Division staked out 22 locations in the downtown area. Sunday, October 30th, 12:05 a.m., Frank and I entered the lobby of the Argus Hotel and we walked up to the desk.
Sorry, we're full up.
Like talk to the manager if we can.
I said we're full up.
We're police officers.
Huh?
This is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Oh.
Could we see the manager?
I'm the manager.
You own this hotel?
Me and my husband.
Well, maybe we better talk to him.
Go ahead, if you can find him.
Isn't he here?
Nope.
Would you know where he is?
Nope. Not getting drunk, probably.
I see.
I work nights, he works days. He don't tell me where he goes at night. I don't tell him what I do during the day. That's our arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
It don't make for a real happy marriage, but it keeps us from killing each other.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there somebody who could take over for you here tonight?
Nope.
Now, you're sure your husband didn't say where he was going?
We don't talk.
Oh.
He wants me to know something, he writes me a note, leaves it on the desk, and I do the same for him.
I see.
We ain't exchanged no words for the last 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Saves a lot of wear and tear on the nervous system. He never said nothing worth listening to anyway.
I see.
Well, what do you fellas want?
Well, ma'am, several hotels have been held up downtown lately.
Yeah.
You were warned about it, weren't you?
George was warned, left me a note.
I see. Well, there's a chance he might come here tonight.
If he does, I'm ready for him.
Hmm?
Got me a gun. Pistol. Keep in the cash drawer, see?
Yes, ma'am.
I know how to use it, too. He shows up, I'm ready for him.
Is there someplace we could wait in case he does?
You don't have to. I don't need no protection. Told you. I've got a gun.
Yes, ma'am. So's he. Mrs. Argus finally agreed to let us stake out the hotel. She showed us into a small room off the lobby. From there, Frank and I could see anybody who entered. During the next 4 hours, only two people requested accommodations. They were both middle-aged men, and neither one of them in any way resembled the suspect's description.
What time you got, Joe?
See, 4:05.
Huh? Latest he ever pulled a job was 3:30.
Yeah.
Maybe he decided to lay off tonight.
Maybe.
Argus Hotel. Who? Oh, yeah. Hey, you guys in there?
Yes, ma'am.
Somebody wants you on the phone.
Okay, I'll be right over.
In the booth.
Yes, ma'am. Friday, you What's that address? Yeah, I got it, thanks. Right.
What's that?
Looks like we staked out the wrong places.
Yeah?
All Night Cafe on South Main. The owner was held up. He's pretty badly wounded.
Huh?
Sawed-off shotgun. Frank and I drove over to the Joplin Grill at the corner of Main and Vincent Place. We talked to the patrol car officers who had discovered Fred Joplin's body. They told us Joplin was unconscious when they found him. They said that they'd call an ambulance and that he'd been taken to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. We telephoned the hospital and asked them to be notified as soon as the victim was available for questioning. 4:42 a.m., Lieutenant Lee Jones and the crew from the crime lab began their investigation. Frank and I went back to the office. October 30th, 10:17 a.m., Georgia Street reported that Joplin had recovered consciousness. We drove down there and talked to Dr. Sebastian. He said that Joplin was suffering from shock and loss of blood. He also said that Joplin's right shoulder was severely lacerated and that there was a possibility the arm would have to be amputated. 10:46 a.m., we interviewed the victim.
Sat down on the stool and asked for a cup of coffee.
Yes, sir.
I turned around, picked up Silex, started filling the cup.
Uh-huh.
Time I was finished, he got his gun out. Guess he had it in that bag he's carrying.
Yes, sir.
Told me it was a stick-up. Said to give him the money from the register or he'd shoot me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say nothing. Just stood there, kind of staring at him.
Yeah.
He raised up his gun. Shotgun it was.
Yes, sir.
I mean business, mister. That's what he said next. I mean business.
I see.
I still didn't say nothing. Just stood there with a cup of coffee in my hand. Start moving, he said. Voice sounded real low and mean. Didn't seem to match his face. Sort of a pleasant-looking fella. Voice was mean, though.
Yeah.
Started gesturing with that shotgun, pointing toward the register. That's when I let fly.
Hmm?
With a cup of coffee. Smashed it right into his face.
I see.
Must have given quite a jolt.
Yes, sir.
Didn't keep him from shooting me, but it sure wrecked his aim some. Leastways, I'm still here. Don't remember nothing after that.
I see.
Sure, hit him a good one, though. Them coffee cups ain't the lightest things in the world.
Yes, sir, I'm standing.
Not to mention the coffee itself. Scalding hot it was.
Mm-hmm.
Right here. That's where I belted him. Right in the jaw. Used to be a ball player, you know.
Is that right?
Wasn't a pro exactly, but I had a first-rate pitching arm. Lefty Joplin, that's what they used to call me. Back in Junction City, Kansas, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Local merchant sponsored our team. Pitched 16 winners one season. Best record in the league.
Yes, yes, very good.
Well, I ain't lost all my technique. Leastways, I sure whacked him with that cup.
Yes, sir.
Doc say anything to you fellas about how I'm doing?
Well, just that you're getting along.
He make up his mind about my right arm yet?
What?
Whether I'm going to lose it or not?
No, sir, he didn't tell us.
Guess in a way, I'm kind of lucky.
What?
Being left-handed.
We asked the victim, Fred Joplin, to describe the suspect. The description he gave us tallied with what we already had. 11:17 a.m., Frank and I went back to the office.
I can't figure it out, Joe.
What?
Why he'd switch from hotels to a cafe.
Well, maybe he tumbled to our stakeouts.
Yeah, I thought sure he'd try the Argus, though. It's the right spot for him. I get it.
Robbery Friday. I see. Yeah. Anything else? Mm-hmm. Well, give us something to go on anyway. Thank you. Right. Lee Jones in the lab.
What's he got?
Well, Joplin was right. He sure didn't miss with that coffee cup.
They find the pieces?
More than that.
Huh?
Found a broken front tooth. Analysis of the broken tooth revealed that it was part of a lower incisor. From what we learned of the suspect, it seemed likely that he would make an immediate effort to have the tooth replaced. For the next 3 days, Frank and I interviewed dentists in the immediate vicinity of the robberies. Thursday, November 3rd, 3:17 p.m., we questioned Dr. Clinton Potterfield in his office on the second floor of the Marsh Building.
Yes. Yes, I believe I had such a patient last Monday.
Broken incisor?
Yes, that's right.
Could you tell us what he looked like?
Oh, young man, about 30, nicely dressed, seemed very pleasant.
Did he say what had happened to his tooth?
Yes, he did. Automobile accident.
I see.
He knocked it against the steering wheel.
Uh-huh.
He wanted a new fitting right away.
Yes, sir.
Agreed to make him a temporary as soon as I could. It should be finished tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He offered to pay me extra if I'd hurry it up. I told him you can't rush a new bridge, even a temporary.
Yes, sir. Did he give you his name and address?
Well, not me personally. My receptionist takes care of those details.
Yes, sir, I understand. Would you mind checking with her?
No, not a bit. Excuse me.
It's about time we got a break.
Oh.
Hey, look out there.
Hmm?
Starting to rain.
Yes, sir, it is.
Yeah, just like the paper said. It's going to be a wet winter.
Yeah. Here you are, gentlemen. I had her copied down for you.
Thank you. Philip Sieber. Huh?
Yes, that's correct. His address is right there, too.
Yeah. Well, at least we know one thing now.
What's that?
Why he skipped over the Argus Hotel.
Yeah?
He lives there. 3:58 p.m. Frank and I drove over to the Argus Hotel, and we talked to the owner, George Argus. He told us that Philip Seaver lived on the second floor, room 23. He said that Seaver was a quiet young man who had been staying at the hotel for the past 6 weeks. He also told us that Seaver worked nights and was probably in his room now. We took the elevator up to the second floor.
There it is.
All right?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, what's that
against the wall?
What?
Move!
I sure don't know what this is all about.
No, he's clean, Joe.
All right, turn around.
Okay.
Where's the shotgun?
You guys must be off your rocker.
I'll see what I can turn up.
All right.
You got no right to come busting in here.
Yeah.
Now, what would I be doing with a shotgun?
Why don't you tell us?
I never had a gun in my life. Boy, you cops sure make the darnest mistakes. I bet you picked the wrong guy up half the time.
Yeah, sure.
Look, there's nothing in that bureau except my clothes there, fella.
Yeah, what about this?
Well, it's just a satchel, that's all.
It's locked.
Where's the key?
I don't know. I lost it.
Break it open.
Yeah. Hey, that's a good bag.
It's not worth anything to you without a key, is it? All right, Seaver, let's go.
How the heck did that get in there?
You don't know.
I told you I didn't.
Yeah.
I never had a shotgun in my life.
Well, you got one now.
Oh, I must have picked up the wrong bag by mistake. Sure, that's what happened.
All right, come on, Seaver.
Okay, I'm coming. Get down!
Got your hand? Be all right.
Look at that.
Huh?
You must have bad ones.
What's that?
Another tooth missing.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On March 12th, trial was held in Department 98, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. Philip Herbert Seaver was tried and convicted of robbery in the first degree, 5 counts, and received sentence as prescribed by law. Robbery in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment for a period of not less than 5 years in the state penitentiary. Because of the viciousness of the suspect, it was decided that the terms would run consecutively. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
That's Dragnet. Great episode from April 5th, 1955, The Big Tooth, starring Jack Webb. Dragnet is heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then we'll be right back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. This is where we play your favorite classic radio shows. All your favorites. Jack Benny, The Shadow, Boston Blackie, Gunsmoke, Dragnet. You just played a Dragnet, Lisa.
I heard that, Carl.
A little later, we have The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley, then X-1. Comedies, westerns, detectives, mysteries, variety. We have it all here every Saturday and Sunday night. From 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. And we have a website at WGNRadioTheater.com. What you doing over there, Lisa?
What you doing over there, Carl?
What you doing?
You know,
what
I
you
was,
talking
I was,
about, Willis?
What you talking about, Willis? I was looking at my Broadway in Chicago thing here. I went to see a show this week that just swept me away.
Yeah.
It was
then
Aladdin.
Why are you here if it swept you away?
I went on a magic carpet ride, but I'm back.
Okay.
So the North American tour launch of Disney's Aladdin is here. It's part of the Broadway in Chicago series. It opened this week at the Cadillac Palace Theater, and what an experience it was. It was... I don't know. It was the classic Aladdin, but it was turned into a musical. The genie and everything.
Yeah.
Adam Jacobs, who originated the title role of Aladdin on Broadway, plays the role here in Chicago. And it contains, the score has all the 5 songs from the original film. And, of course, all the characters we know and love. And what a creative team and the costumes and the sets and the talent. I could go on and on. I just wanted to mention it. It was a spectacular experience.
Wow, great, Lisa.
I wanted
Lisa.
You to know about that.
You love Broadway plays, don't you?
Well, this one was really special. It's a great family show. You can check it out at BroadwayInChicago.com.
Right, and you see something pretty much every week, right?
Oh, for sure.
Broadway Lisa?
Sure.
So Lisa, here's the deal. Lisa's an actress. She's a radio
co-host. Something or another?
She's about to get another radio show where she's an advice column.
Right. I'm about to. I'm so close. Yeah. I'm almost there.
We're going to start you out on a college radio station for
you
that.
You keep telling me that.
That's where I started.
Are you taunting me?
What? So I started on a college radio station.
Well, okay. I'm glad.
And look, now I'm on WGN Radio.
Well, I didn't start here. I started on WIND.
Yeah.
That's a local Chicago station out of Elk Grove Village.
Right.
I was there for 9 years and earned
Was it 9 years? Yeah, I guess it was 9 years.
I earned my keep.
That's true. Her first day, she brought food and I said, no talking.
Don't talk on the radio.
Don't talk on the radio.
I'm like, no, of course. No problem.
And now look.
See what I did?
Not only are you the co-host of this show, but now you're going to get another show and I'm going to be the sidekick.
Well, I'm going to have to tell you not to talk. See how it feels.
And do you like the name? The Mars and Venus show?
Well, that's why I came up with it.
No, you did not come up with
it. Yes, I did.
I came up with the name last week, and she was like, that's a great name. Now she's taking credit for it on the radio.
Now, you said Life Coach with Lisa, the Life Coach, and I'm like, it's
pretty
good.
Life Coach Lisa.
Yeah, but
here's your opening line, Lisa.
All right.
Okay.
And it's from George Carlin.
Uh-huh.
Men say that women are crazy. Well, that's because men are stupid, which makes women crazy.
Oh, wait. Hang on a second. I got to hit this.
He's a little
How's
slow.
That, huh?
He's a little slow.
I was a little
I don't
slow
actually
with it.
Think that.
No?
So I wouldn't say that. But, I mean, it's funny, but I don't really think that.
You don't
really?
Think?
No, I don't.
You think men are normal?
I didn't say that they're normal. I said I don't think they're stupid is what I was going to say.
Oh.
I don't know. Some men are normal.
We're just sneakily manipulative.
Sometimes. Some men. Not all of them.
Just the vast majority of them.
Some of them. And some of them needed, a constant assistance
See
and
how
support.
See, how this worked out, David, is because I have many problems,
We can tell,
no.
Can't we?
Lots
really?
Of,
David.
David and I have worked together
for
2 years.
Is a Jafar laugh, if I ever heard one.
David and I have worked together 2 years. He knows I have lots of problems.
Well, you're not that bad.
Yeah.
You know what? Everybody knows. You can just pick up on it.
And Lisa's great at solving problems.
I'm
and
a problem solver.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after midnight here. Happy Monday. Wait, Sunday.
It's Sunday, though.
Happy Sunday, Lisa.
Happy Sunday.
Yeah, all right.
Happy Sunday, David.
Yeah, happy Sunday.
Time for a nap.
Hey, Cubs won, man. Cubs won. That's the important thing.
I'm just disappointed by the Hawks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very short-lived playoff
four
there.
Four in a row?
Yeah,
ow.
That was, it was very surprising.
Guys wearing their after uniforms?
After great season to go down
he
in
did
flames
well.
So quickly. But we have the Cubs. Cubs are going all the way again this year. That's what do you think of that song? I'm going to try
it
to copyright
really
it.
Sounds really good when you sing
copyright
it.
Copyright it. And hey, I told you I sang that song. What was the song I sang last week from what play was that?
Oh,
remember?
Cabaret?
Yeah, Life is a Cabaret. I told you, the producer called me and offered me the co-starring
is that right?
Role in
I
it.
Didn't hear about
yeah.
that. And where
in
is this
Cabaret.
Performance? And what state are we talking?
I think it's...
Plano?
No, I think it might have been Newark, New Jersey.
Oh.
Something like that.
Well, if you do it, I will come.
You'll come and watch
I
me?
I will come.
Make a fool of myself?
It would be my happy day.
In this hour, it's The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley, and then after that, X minus one good sci-fi adventure, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Gypsy, about a therapist who develops intimate relationships with the people in her patients' lives.
You slurred a few of those words.
I did not.
No,
a therapist.
The therapist?
Who develops relationships
yeah.
with the people in her patients' lives.
Okay, all right. 312-981-7200. What do they win? They win speech therapy.
Okay. They win a Lou Malnati's pizza.
Really?
Get
wow.
certificate for $25. Well, of course I am.
312-981-7200. This actress was the star of The Ring.
The tape. Did you watch it?
Did you watch the tape? Did you watch the tape, Lisa? All right, who is that great actress? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop in addition to classic radio. And let's hear that movie clip one more time.
The tape. Did you watch it?
And we have Todd on the line. Hey, Todd.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Todd.
We're glad you got through, and we're hoping you know who that actress is.
I think it's Naomi Watts.
It is Naomi Watts. You are absolutely right. Todd or Naomi?
Naomi.
Oh,
I
wasn't
her.
Sure.
I date her.
I wasn't sure. Todd, you won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. Home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnatis.com. Stop laughing at me.
Okay.
Todd, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
take
Todd.
Care.
Appreciate you. All right, and thanks for staying up late with us. You got the giggles?
I don't know. I just had to clear my throat, and you're laughing at me.
I picked you up some Pellegrino. She's drinking Pellegrino. Maybe that's making you giggle because it's got bubbles in it.
You know, whatever
works.
I'm going to have to stop smiling while I speak.
But, you know, in all seriousness, I had speech problems as a kid. I had to take speech therapy as a kid. I'm not joking around here.
So what happened to you?
Well, as a very little kid, I broke my eardrum.
How?
Yeah. I was a little kid and I was playing with Q-tips.
Oh,
I was like running around with
dangerous.
Q-tips in my ears.
Oh my.
And I fell and the Q-tip
went in
and I broke my eardrum. And that affected my speech.
Yeah, especially while you were developing it.
Right. And then in school, I would imagine they still do this for little kids. You know, you take like tests as a kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I took my test for speech, I didn't pass it because I had a lisp. Yeah, I did because of this.
Do you remember what the letters were that you had trouble with?
All I know, yeah, I mean, I talked with a lisp, and all I remember is going for at least 2 or 3 years, I would get out of certain classes
right,
of school
and head over
and go to the teacher, and they would do this thing where they would put my, you know, headphones sort of on,
right.
And I'd have to determine what the sound was, and
you
I was
are
speaking.
Just lucky that you had that support system
mm-hmm.
that helped you, especially during
yeah.
those formative years.
Yeah, and so,
and now perfection.
And now I'm on the radio. I have other problems,
oh,
but I don't think I have a speech impediment.
Okay,
right anymore.
I don't think so.
I think that was cured thanks
up.
To good schooling.
That is exactly
right. And it was at Washington School in Schiller Park. Washington School. So thanks, Washington School.
Yeah,
appreciate that.
I know schools do need support systems.
All right. Time for The Life of Riley, Lisa. It was a great comedy show. William Bendix starred as Chester A. Riley. He was a devoted family man and airplane riveter. He didn't have a speech impediment.
Right.
Yeah. It was created by Irving Brecker as a radio series for his friend Groucho Marx. Did you know that?
No.
He created this series for Groucho Marx, but it didn't work out with Groucho, and he hired William Bendix. And great show. It was on the radio a long, long time. Came to radio in 1941, lasted until 1951, then made a very successful transition to television. William Bendix starred in the television version as well, but Jackie Gleason played Riley in the very first season because Bendix wasn't available. He had a movie contract or something like that. All right, it's time now for The Life of Riley, March 22nd, 1947. This is called Riley the Milkman, Part 1 now, The Life of Riley.
It starts with D and ends with T. That's Dreft, the greatest suds discovery in 2,000 years. Dreft brings you The Life of Riley. Dreft. Dreft, D-R-E-F-T. Dreft, Procter & Gamble's sudsing miracle for washing silks, woolens, nylons, dishes, presents The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Whenever Chester A. Riley entertains you at dinner, he dishes out large portions of everything, especially advice. Tonight, the Rileys have as their guest a young man who works at the aircraft plant with Riley.
Oh, that sure was a swell dinner, Mrs. Riley.
Well, thank you, Tommy. Glad you enjoyed it.
Peg, you take Tommy inside and I'll go dish up the coffee. We don't drink our coffee at the table, Tommy. We always have it after dinner in the library.
Library?
Yeah, that's our library over there. Them two Esquires on top of the radio.
Riley.
Gee, you've got a swell house here. You know, my wife would give anything to have a home like this.
Well, she'll have one, Tommy. Just be patient. You're young yet.
Peg's right. Owning your own home is a big responsibility.
And it's a lot of work.
It certainly is. Washing windows, mowing the lawn, fixing screens, unblocking the sink. Ties a man down. Sometimes when we have a date, I have to hang around for hours waiting for Peg to get through.
Oh, I know there's a lot of work, but it's better than living with your in-laws.
Oh, I didn't know you lived with your in-laws.
Ever since we got married. It isn't easy.
Oh, I don't know. You could be worse off than living with your in-laws. You could be living with, you could be living down in, you could be dead.
Attention to him, Tommy. Why, when Riley and I first got married, we lived with my folks.
Sure, and we got along fine with them. They loved me insanely. Her father was even more insane to me than her mother.
Yeah, but, gee, my wife's father, well, he keeps reminding me that I'm dependent on them, like he's giving me charity.
Oh, you mustn't feel that way.
Well, you're going at this all wrong, Tommy. You see, I knew how to talk to Peg's old man. Now, just a minute, I said. So what if you're giving me free room and board? I'm entitled to a break. After all, I took your daughter off your hands.
Why, you never said any such thing.
Well, maybe not those words exactly, but I put him in his place, and that's what you got to do, Tommy.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'll go get us some hot coffee. It's freezing in here since I fixed that heating system. Excuse me.
Oh, gee, I wish I was like Mr. Riley. You know, not afraid of anybody.
Tommy, would you like to hear how Riley really handled his in-law problem?
Well, he just said
yes,
that
yes, I heard what he just said, but he left out a few details.
Well, sure, I'd like to hear all about it.
Well, when we first got married, we had to live with my folks. Riley didn't have a job. I kept on with my job, of course, but I didn't make enough to pay rent on a place of our own. Living with my folks wasn't very pleasant. I remember one night...
Yeah, it's me, Dumplin'.
Oh, hello, dear. Any luck?
No, I walked my feet off. Oh, it's no use, Peggy. I guess I might as well face it. I'm a failure.
You are not. You'll connect one of these days, you'll see.
Oh, Peggy, my wonderful darling wife. Here I am, broke. I haven't worked a day since we're married. And you're so sweet to me. Oh, if we could only go on like this forever.
Chester, Mom and Sis are out visiting, but Pop will be home any minute. Then we'll have supper.
Wait a minute, Peggy. I got something for you. Here, Angel.
Roses! Oh, Chester, they're beautiful. Chester, you spent your lunch money on me again.
No, I didn't pay for them. You know in the park where they got a design of Mayor Noonan's face made with roses?
Yes.
Well, from now on, the mayor's name is No Nose Noonan.
Don't
be mad, Peggy.
Oh, I forgive you. Here, Chester, for the roses.
Tomorrow the mayor's going to be bald-headed.
Oh, well, sit down. Here's the evening paper.
Oh, thanks. Oh, this is living, Dumplin'.
Oh, good evening, Papa.
Good evening, my dear.
Good evening, Papa.
Supper's almost ready, Papa. Why don't you sit down?
How can I when somebody who doesn't pay a cent toward the rent is sitting in my chair?
Oh, Papa, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here's your chair, Papa.
And don't call me Papa.
Yes, sir, Mr. Barker.
Well, supper's practically ready, Papa. You read your paper.
How can I, when somebody who isn't paying a cent toward the rent has already got it?
Oh, Papa, why are you always picking on Chester? He's trying to get a job. He just has no luck.
No luck. He's just lazy.
Chester is not lazy.
No, he isn't, huh? I met Mr. Pryor today. Told me he offered that husband of yours a job in his theater as an usher, and he turned it down.
Oh, Chester, why didn't you take it?
Well, I already seen the picture. Anyway, it was only temporary until the regular usher got back from lunch.
Oh, alibis, always alibis. For somebody who doesn't pay a...
Oh, Papa, sight... if you say that once more, I...
Hey. Now, look what you've done, you chiseler. Why did I ever let my daughter marry a nincompoop like you?
Now you're going a little too far. You can call me a chiseler, you can call me a loafer, but you got no right calling me an nincompoop when you know yourself I ain't got no income. Don't cry, Dumplin'. Don't be mad at me.
Oh, it's not you, Chester. I just can't bear it, living with my folks this way.
Oh, it ain't so bad, Peggy. I'm getting used to sleeping on the living room couch. And you got a bed all to yourself in your sister's room. Well, don't you like sleeping with your sister?
Oh, Chester, we just got to get a place of our own.
Well, I know, Dumplin'. We've been saying that all along.
Yes, but now there's a special reason. You see, well, we'll need more room. There's someone coming to sort of visit us.
Oh, that's nice. When?
In about 6 months.
Anyone I know?
Well, not exactly.
Well, that's okay. Your friends are my friends. But can't he postpone his visit for a year or two?
Oh, Chester, you don't understand. I got some news for you. It's a surprise.
Peg, you don't mean...
I'm going to have a baby.
A baby. Whew. For a minute there, I thought you lost your job. But if all you're worrying about is a baby, why... A baby! A baby! Peg, I'm going to have a baby! Don't move, Peg. I'll carry you to the hospital.
Oh, put me down, Chester. It won't be for quite a while.
Oh, Peg, darling, it's wonderful. A baby. And it won't be like the wedding ring I gave you. We'll own the baby outright. Gosh, a baby. What kind will it be?
Well, I don't know yet,
Billy. Gee, I hope it's a boy or a girl. Excited.
Well, I'm glad you're glad, Chester. But now you see why we just have to get a place of our own.
Yeah, well, we'll move out of here first thing tomorrow. I'll get a job. This baby's going to change our luck. I'll get a job, you'll see.
Oh, I know you will. And it doesn't have to pay very much because I'll go on working.
Oh, no, you won't.
Well, but I can work.
No, nothing doing, sweetheart. From now on, you're staying home. I want you to be right there with the baby when it's born.
He's drunk. For a man who doesn't pay a cent.
I ain't drunk, Peg. I got a job.
Oh, Papa, do you hear that? Chester's got a job.
The depression must be over.
Oh, Chester, what kind of a job? How much will you get? What do you do?
Oh, it's a swell job. I'm a milkman. I got my own route, and I work on commission. The more I sell, the more I make.
Oh, Chester, I just know you're going to make lots and lots of money.
And you know what I'm going to do with my first pay?
You can start paying some rent around here.
Oh, no. We've got an apartment of our own now.
We have?
Yeah, I just rented it. It's just a small place, only $15 a month. Pack our stuff, Peg.
Oh, Chester, I'm so happy. Isn't it wonderful, Papa? Well, the least you can do, Papa, is wish us good luck.
Yes, good luck, Peggy.
What about Chester?
Huh.
Thanks, Papa. Well, here's the place, Dumplin'.
Well, it's sort of out of the way, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a very quiet neighborhood. It'll be good when the baby comes. Well, come on, let's go take a look at our little penthouse.
Well, all right. Let's go up.
Not up, down.
Down?
Yeah, well, you see, it's a sort of underground penthouse. Come on, it's just one flight down.
You mean it's in a basement?
Well, yeah, but that's good for the baby. He won't be able to fall down the stairs. Well, here it is. Well, wait, I'll open the door. It just needs a little oil. Well, how do you like it?
Well, it's so dark. There isn't much light. I guess our electric bills will be pretty high.
Oh, no, they won't. We ain't got electricity. We got gas. See? Well, what do you think of it? The kitchen's behind that curtain, and the bathroom's behind that curtain, and the bedroom's behind that curtain. And that sofa can be fixed in a jiffy. I'll get a little hair from my horse's tail and stuff it. Believe me, Peg, there's nothing wrong with this place that a little paint, glue, nails, glass, and varnish can't fix. Well, what do you think of it, Peggy? Well, gee, Peggy, I know it ain't the nicest place in the world, but it's all our own. And it's very convenient. It's very close to the subway.
That's the first portion of The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley in Riley the Milkman from 1947. More in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Just a few moments ago, I heard... Thank you, by the way, Susan. Great job up there.
You're welcome.
I wanted to tell you, I heard you doing an Idlewood Electric radio spot there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're a big fan of Idlewood Electric. And you buy your lights from them.
I do. I went in there the other day just to buy, well, not just, but to buy a beautiful fixture because that is the, you know, premier lighting showroom.
For the Wolf Mansion.
For the Wolf Mansion. And I'm looking around and I'm just in awe of the beauty. But besides the great fixtures, it's the team there. They're knowledgeable. They're professional. They're experienced. And they're helpful. And I appreciate that Idlewood Electric has been in business for almost 60 years.
Wow.
I know. They're in Highland Park and they're in Barrington, which is near you.
Yep.
And they're in Chicago, which is near everyone.
I'm glad you told me about them because I'm going to need some lights soon.
We all need some lights.
Yeah.
You light up my life, Carl.
You know what? But you showed me their website. They have amazing stuff.
You know
what?
Check out their website. It's idlewoodelectric.com. I posted on Facebook some pictures. What I posted is a picture of my kitchen fixture, which I bought there, my bathroom fixtures, which
Whoa.
I bought there. But the fixture I just purchased the other day when I went in there was for my entry hall.
It's huge.
It's 55
As
inches.
As Trump would say, it's huge.
It's huge. It weighs 96 pounds or something, and it's on order. It's coming soon, and I can't wait to share it with you.
You have like five people coming to hoist it up there.
I think they're going to need it.
Hoist the bounding main.
They're having a spring sale, but if you starting May 5th through May 13th, if you mention WGN,
yeah.
You can go in right now and get the sale prices. And
oh.
I urge you to check it out. It's a wonderful place, like I said, not only because of the fixtures they have there and the lighting that they have there, but because of the professionalism, the service. And you know what? And it's feeling proud when a great job is complete. And I've had a lot of interaction with them, and I highly recommend them.
All right. So they're in Barrington and where else?
Highland Park.
In Highland Park.
And
okay.
Chicago.
Nice.
Three locations.
All right. Idlewood Electric. And what are they, idlewoodelectric.com?
That's it.
All right, check them out, folks, especially if you need a gigantic fixture.
Or even something very
small. A mansion
small.
Like Lisa.
Exactly.
All right, let's get back now to The Life of Riley.
What's that?
The subway. It's right under us.
Oh, Chester.
But don't worry, it's only every 5 minutes.
It didn't come from below.
No, that came from above. We're under a bowling alley.
Hey,
also near the East River. Gee, I didn't realize. I guess it ain't so nice after all.
Oh, no. Now stop talking like that. We can fix this place up fine. And the most important thing is we have a place to ourselves.
So, here you are.
But Papa!
So this is the kind of a hole you expect my daughter to live in.
But Papa!
Be quiet, Peggy. I'm going to tell that husband of yours exactly what I think of him. Riley, you're nothing but a... And not only that, you are a... And what's more, you ought to be...
Would you mind repeating that?
Why, you... Peggy, get your things. You're coming home with me.
Oh, please, Papa, give Chester a chance to make good. We want our own place. Please.
Well... All right. You've got 1 week, Riley. And if you haven't got a decent place for her to live in, she's coming home. And that's final.
There goes the door. That home wrecker.
Well, don't you worry. We'll get out of here soon. We'll show Papa. You'll make good.
You're just saying that to make me feel good.
I am not. Why do you think I married you?
For my looks?
No, darling. No, I married you because you're going to be a big success. You've got personality and ambition and brain.
Oh, Dumplin', keep on lying to me. I love it.
Gosh, you and Mr. Riley sure were in a spot with him broke and all.
Oh, yes, Tommy. It was pretty awful for us newlyweds. My father gave Riley 1 week to get us a decent apartment, or else I'd have to go home and live with my folks. Meanwhile, poor Riley was worried sick about making good in his new job as milkman.
But I guess he came through okay.
Well, he worked hard for a whole week, 12 hours a day. And then that night he came home, and I was waiting for him. You got your first pay envelope.
Well, yeah, but wait, Peggy.
Don't tell me how much you made. Let me open it. I want to be surprised. Oh, I'm so excited. It's empty.
Surprised?
But I don't understand.
Well, drivers only get $4 basic pay plus commission on all the milk we sell. And I didn't sell any.
None at all?
Well, I did sell a quart a day to myself for lunch.
And that's all?
Yeah. I didn't want to worry you, Peg. I didn't tell you. I got the worst route in the city. On my route, they don't go for milk. It's mostly the beer drinking set.
Oh.
Cheer up, Dumplin'. At least I made my $4 basic pay.
But where is it?
Well, there's a few deductions. They took out 2 1/4 for my uniform and $1 for 2 tickets to the milkman's ball, 25 cents for the pension fund for me, and 50 cents pension fund for the horse. Believe me, I wish I was a horse.
Oh, Chester, what do we do? What do we tell Papa? He'll be here tomorrow.
I'm going out again right now. Maybe if I sell a lot of milk today, he won't think I'm as big a failure as I really am. Ain't it awful, Daisy? 5 hours already and I ain't sold a bottle. Whoa, Daisy, I better phone Peg and tell her how I'm doing. Whoa! Whoa, Daisy. Hey, kid, hey, you over there.
Yeah? What do you want, white pants?
Well, I gotta make a phone call. Watch my wagon, will you?
Sure, mister, I'll take care of your wagon, but good.
I'll be right back.
Oh, boy, what a setup. Hey, Fingers, Fatso, Muggsy, free milk, come and get it.
Hey, what's up, Snake Eyes?
Some dumb cluck left me to watch his cow juice. Come on, we gotta wake fast.
Ah, who needs milk? There's nothing on fire.
Oh, don't be a dope. We can sell it for a nickel a bottle. Come on, grab the stuff. Hey, Muggsy, give me a hand with this case.
Boy, what a soft touch.
Hey, watch this, gang, here comes a guy.
Hey,
Hey, what are you boys up to?
Nothing, Mr. Honest.
Where are you going with that milk?
The driver said we could take it free.
He's giving it to you? What's this driver's name?
I don't know, mister, but he's real sweet.
Hey, there's his name on this card in the wagon here. Chester A. Riley.
Chester A. Riley, huh? And he's giving you all this milk?
Yeah, for our little baby brothers and sisters and all the poor hungry kids in the neighborhood what ain't got no milk. Honest, I ain't had a schooner of milk in weeks.
Oh, no. For Pete's sake, kid, don't start crying. I think it's a great idea. Come on, I'll help you.
Well, here I am, Daisy. Hey, where did the kid go? I told him to wait. Well, say, you know, Daisy, the inside of this wagon looks different. There's something missing. I can't quite put my finger on it, but there's some... My milk! My milk is gone! Help! Police! I've been milked! Daisy, what'll my boss say? It's bad enough I can't sell the milk. Now I lose it. Oh, Daisy, it's hopeless. I'm just a failure. I'll wind up digging ditches.
And what's wrong with digging ditches?
Who's that?
It is I, Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker.
Oh, hello, Digger.
Greetings, Riley. You're looking fine. Very natural.
Oh, Digger, I feel terrible. A bunch of kids just stole all the milk off of my wagon.
Oh, you're in the wrong business. They wouldn't dare steal anything from my vehicle.
Oh, those kids, they put me in a terrible spot.
Yes, children can be aggravating. Yesterday, a gang of hoodlums stole a sign from an employment agency and hung it on the door of my business establishment. Oh, I was devastated.
Well, why? What did the sign say?
We guarantee to place you in a permanent position.
I'll probably get fired now.
Oh, you can always work for me. I can use a live man down at my place.
Well, thanks, Digger. Maybe I will come down to your place when I reach the end of my rope.
Good. I'll be looking for you.
Worst thing is, now I'll have to go back and live with my in-laws.
You have my deepest sympathy. When I was first married, I moved in with my in-laws, and I also did my work there.
Did they pick on you?
Yes. They objected to the way I left things lying around the house. Tell me, Riley, as friend to friend, could you use a little money?
Well, no, thanks, Digger. I'll be all right. You know the old saying, you can't keep a good man down.
Would you care to bet? Well, cheerio. I'd better be shoveling off.
Mr. Manager. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, it's you, Riley. I've been waiting 2 hours to check you out. I got a good mind to report you to the boss. Well, come on, let's have it. How many bottles did you get rid of?
All of them.
All of them? On that route? Well, you're okay, Riley. Where's the cash?
Well, you see, I haven't got any.
You haven't got any? You got rid of the milk, didn't you?
Yeah, but you see...
Now, don't try to tell me you were robbed. I'm wise to those tricks.
But I was...
You're fired, Riley. And you have that dough here by tomorrow, or you'll wind up in jail.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Well, so long.
Get out.
Hey, what's going on here, Joe?
Oh, hello, Chief. I just fired this dope here.
He means me.
Well, what are you hanging around for? Beat it, stupid. Joe, where's this driver, Chester Riley?
That's him. Stupid.
What? How dare you call my friend Riley stupid? Riley, I'm J.B. Trotter, president of the company. Sit down, my boy. Have a cigar.
But, yes, sir.
But, Mr. Trotter, this...
Shut up, Joe.
Look, Mr. Trotter, I can explain about the milk.
You don't have to, Chet, my boy. It's all here in the paper. Smart of you to tell that reporter.
They put it in the paper?
Now listen to this. Kind-hearted milkman gives free milk to hungry babies. Chester A. Riley of Sunbeam Dairies, and so on and so on and so on. Yes, it's all right there on the front page. Why, new orders have been pouring into the office by the hundreds. Thanks to you, Chet. And you thought of this all by yourself.
Well, but you don't understand. You think that I... Look, Mr. Trotter, my mother brought me up never to tell a lie. And if I told one now, she'd never forgive me. So listen, you see? Yes, sir, I thought of this all by myself. Oh, Mother, please forgive me. Well, here it is, Peg. Here we are, our new apartment.
Oh, Chester, it's beautiful. But I still don't understand. It all happened so quick.
Dumplin', I keep telling you, my boss thinks I'm a big hero. He's given me a swell job on salary. So I went right out and got this apartment.
Oh, we're so lucky.
Yeah. But the best thing of all, we won't have to live with your father.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah. Me too. Ain't it wonderful to be happy?
Good evening, Peggy.
Oh, Papa.
They told me at the old place I'd find you here. Riley?
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Parker. I made good. I got us a nice home now.
Yes, a fine place, Chet. Absolutely beautiful. I always knew you'd make the grade, son.
Ah, right. So it's okay, huh? We won't have to move in with you?
Of course not, son. And to show you there's no hard feelings, I'm going to move in with you.
What a revolting development this is.
Well, that's the story, Tommy.
Some story. After hearing about Mr. Riley, I guess I'm not doing so bad with my in-laws after all.
Well, here's the coffee. Sugar and cream, Tommy?
Yeah, thank you.
Now, what was we talking about? Oh, yeah, in-laws. Tommy, let me tell you how I handle my in-laws.
I've already told him, Riley.
Yeah, but I... You mean the truth?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, you had quite a time there, Mr. Riley.
Well, yeah, but I don't want you to get the wrong impression, Tommy. I love my father-in-law. I get such a nice, warm feeling inside of me every time I think of my dear old father-in-law. 3,000 miles away in Brooklyn.
Procter & Gamble, makers of Kraft, the sudsing miracle for soaps, nylons, woolens, dishes, invites you to be their guests next week to hear The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. William Bendix will soon be seen in the Paramount picture Blaze of Noon. The Life of Riley is produced by Irving Brecker and is directed by Don Bernard. Music by Lou Kosloff. The script by Alan Lipscott, Reuben Shipp, and Jack Brecker. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow, Digger Odell is John Brown, Peg's father is Lou Merrill, and Tommy is Gil Stratton. This is Ken Carpenter inviting you to listen again next week to The Life of Riley and reminding you for faster, brighter, safer cleaning than any suds before in history, use Dreft. Don't get left, get Dreft. Week when Dreft, the sudsing miracle for soaks, nylons, woolens, dishes, brings you The Life of Riley.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's The Life of Riley from March 22nd, 1947. Flashback story there. Riley the Milkman, William Bendix as Chester A. Riley. And, this show, this radio show, and the person who created this show taught me a life lesson, Lisa. Did I ever tell you this story?
Probably, but I'll just pretend I didn't.
Irving
hear it.
Brecker, who created this show, when I tried to license the show from, you know, I had already licensed the Burns and Allen series. I had, you know, The Shadow and Jack Benny. I had all these great series under license. And I contacted, this was years ago, 25 plus years ago, and I contacted Irving Brecker. And a really nice man. And I said, you know, I'd love to license The Life of Riley from you. And he's like, okay, well, what's the deal? And I said, well, when we sell it, we pay a royalty. You know, when we air it, we pay a royalty to air it and sell it. And he's like, what's the advance? And I told him what the advance was. And he said, that's not big enough advance. And I said, well, that's what I've been paying for all of the shows. I basically paid that for Jack Benny. I paid that for this and that. And he said, yeah, but, you know, here's the thing. The life of Riley is very important to me. I created it, he said. And I want you thinking about my show. I want you making sure you make a lot of money with that show for me. I want you to be thinking about the life of Riley all the time. And the only way I'm going to get you, Carl Amari, to be thinking about the life of Riley is to get you to pay me a big advance, much bigger than any of the other advances. And I said, well, I can't afford it. You know, I was starting out in the business. He's like, well, when you can't afford it, call me back. This is a true story.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I did call him back. About a year later, I cobbled the money together, and he licensed me the show. And guess what? I did think about the life of Riley a lot because I had to recoup that advance.
So how much more did you pay for that than the others?
About double.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, I didn't have a deal with the other ones where I had to pay them any more than, I mean, it wasn't like that. It was just, I sort of had a standard advance that I paid everybody. And this, and Irving, a very smart guy, he said, no, I don't want to be like everybody else. I want you thinking about my show. I want you using it all the time and putting it in collections. And if I'm going to license this to you, I want it to be everywhere.
Good.
And
good
it taught
him.
Me, it really taught me a lesson. And it worked. I mean, he,
this, now that this you're was fabulously a, wealthy, this, you can afford it.
This was a smart man, and he taught me a life lesson. If you want someone to be thinking about your property, charge them a lot of money for it.
Okay, well, that only works sometimes.
He was a really, really nice man and very talented man. He wrote Meet Me in St. Louis, and he wrote a bunch of Groucho Marx, Marx Brothers movies, and he was an Academy Award winner. Academy Award-winning writer, created the life of Riley. Very nice man. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, 6 minutes after one. Thank you, Susan. It's warming up out there. You heard what Susan said. By Monday, it's going to be in the 60s.
I'm ready.
Gotta like that. Boy, I tell you, I have my first baseball game tomorrow morning.
Is it going to be warm?
I'm
going to
have about 2 hours sleep. I'm going to go home. Get about 2 hours sleep,
oh,
get up,
no.
Drive to Trinity University in Deerfield for my first game tomorrow, 9 a.m.
Yeah, Trinity College. It's right
well,
by
it's
me.
Trinity. There's college. A Trinity College, which is in Palos Hills, and then there's a Trinity University in Deerfield. I looked it up today.
Oh,
they're probably both
Trinity,
colleges, but the baseball field is
in like Bannockburn, I think it is.
Yeah, that's Deerfield.
Yeah, that's the one
that's
right
the
by
one,
me.
Off a half day road.
Yeah, I live off of there.
Do you?
I'm really close.
Do you live on the baseball field?
No, I live at Trinity.
Oh.
You can fix her TV situation.
I'm going to. Well, here's what I'm going to do. Tomorrow I'm going to play my the position that I always play, left out.
Left out.
And then I'm going to go and fix Lisa's TV.
It's not broken.
Day.
Yeah, it's a
it
lot
is
of pressure, isn't it? I spent the day with my daughter walking around DePaul University today. We took a tour.
Did you take Simba with?
No, just my daughter. We took a tour, just wandered around. And
when are you going to have another bash at your place, at your mansion?
I don't know. Let's next time you have to bring something.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Susan, do you believe that she invited me over to her house? And for some strange reason.
Well, he said, I'll bring the wine. And I said, okay, thanks.
And I didn't bring any.
Yeah.
Oh, no. She says I didn't. I think I did.
No. He said, I'll bring two bottles. I'll
maybe
bring a red and I'll
bring
a white. And I said, thank you. That would be great.
That would be great,
maybe
right?
She just didn't see me. Maybe I brought him in. I gave him to your husband.
Carl is very difficult to miss in a room. Do you agree?
Surely, yes. But you know, something's a little sketchy
that
about that wine.
I tell you what, I can't even imagine going to somebody's house for the first time. I was going to your house for the first time
true.
Not bringing wine
so
or something.
So it might be a while till your
that's
next
not
invite.
Like me, Susan, is it?
No, I think you can make up for it all tomorrow morning.
By fixing her TV.
You could bring over some pie. You like pie.
Yeah.
I like a fresh pie.
What kind of pie do you like?
Strawberry.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Doesn't that sound good?
Strawberry pie is
nice. A mixed berry, like a raspberry or something like that.
That sounds good.
That's nice.
I'm hungry. I get hungry doing this show late at night, Susan.
I know. It's terrible, and you shouldn't be, because maybe you ate right before you came in, but then it just... Hey, we need more of your anniversary cake.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. How late are you working this morning, too?
I believe about 4:30 when Mr. Schwann gets here.
Yeah. You know what, Susan? I'm tired, and then I get home, and I'm not tired anymore. Yeah, I think you get past the point of tired. And then I'm just awake.
Well, see,
and that's that.
See, I have to drive home. Lisa has a driver. She has, picking her up in her Bentley.
Oh, well, it's not my Bentley. Nice. I just get picked up.
The convertible. She has a Maybach, a Bentley, and a Rolls. And he sort of, alternates and rotates with it.
I'm fine with the Yugo. Anybody that will drive me home, I don't care what it is.
You sleep in the car while the driver drives
you
home.
That's Yugo. I haven't seen one of those in a while.
That's service, right? Yugo.
All right. Well, in this hour, it's X-1, good sci-fi adventure from 1956, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Friends from College, which follows a group of friends who went to Harvard together 20 years after graduation.
All right, what do they win?
They will win a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
Wow.
Produced by Carl Amari and hosted by Stacey Keach.
Good prize.
I know it.
312-981-7200 is the number. Win some Twilight Zone CDs. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of the Wonder Years.
Yeah, well, thanks for telling me, but I really have to be going.
All right, who is that actor?
He sounds so young there.
Well, because he was young there. 312-981-7200. Who is that actor? He grew up here in Chicago.
I know.
Did you know that?
Yes,
all right, we'll find our winner after these words.
We are back and playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Yeah, well, thanks for telling me, but I really have to be going.
I love this show.
I loved this show.
Wonder Years was so great.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were about to say who it was.
No, I didn't say the name.
I know. I got excited. I loved this show. I watched it religiously. So let's talk to Dave. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Good. Good to hear from you. Did you watch this?
I really loved this show. I really, really loved the
Do you mean Wonder Years or WGN Radio Theater?
No, he likes our show.
Oh, our show.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Easy to play. It's excellent.
Thank you
so much.
So who is that young actor?
It is Fred Savage.
Fred Savage is exactly right. I liked WGN Radio Theater more than I liked Wonder Years, I'm just saying. Fred, you're a winner, and we are going to send you some Twilight Zone CDs. It's a 4-CD set, and Carl's going to send, WGN will send it out to you, but it's prepared especially from Carl Amari.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Enjoy the CDs, and thanks for staying up late. To all of our listeners, thanks for staying up late with us here on the WGN Radio Theater. We are here till 2 o'clock in the morning every Saturday and Sunday. Make sure you're with us each week. Tell a friend, and we have a good sci-fi adventure now for you on X-1. You know what happened, Lisa? Back in about 1950... a movie came out called Destination Moon, and it was a adult sci-fi movie. And NBC Radio said, you know what? We've really never done any adult sci-fi. They had kids sci-fi shows like Space Patrol and I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon, things like that, kids sci-fi. They didn't really have any adult sci-fi. And so this Destination Moon came out, and adults were going to the theater and seeing it. So NBC said, let's create a sci-fi radio series, and they did. It was called Dimension X. And then that only lasted one season, but then a couple of years later, they revived it and called it X-1. And that lasted about 3 years. So in 1955, X-1 came to the radio, NBC Radio, and lasted 3 seasons. Ernest Canoy and George Lefferts were the two writers who sort of adapted some of the best sci-fi stories from Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury, Robert Heinlein, Frederick Pohl. And there were really no movie stars or anything on this. It was just great supporting actors This was produced in New York, so it was all the East Coast actors like Louis Van Ruten, Bob Hastings, Paul Frees were on it. And so it had great actors, and it was a terrific, terrific series. So we're going to play one for you now. It's called Hello Tomorrow. This stars John Larkin and Madge. Jan Miner, remember Madge, the Palmolive dishwashing
sure
liquid?
Do. You're soaking
You're
in
soaking
it.
In it. She's the star along with John Larkin. This is from February 29th, 1956. Here's part one of X Minus One.
In just a moment, X Minus One. But first, everything from famous criminals to accidents in the home will be covered tomorrow when the staff of NBC's Weekday brings you another day of informative and entertaining listening. And back again to greet you as new hostess is charming Virginia Graham, well-loved by every radio and television fan. There'll be big guest stars, too, headliners in every field. Mel Torme, singing sensation. Gladys Cooper, prominent Broadway actress, and many others. Treat yourself to the best daytime entertainment with NBC's Weekday tomorrow. And now stay tuned for X Minus One on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of a future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight's story, Hello Tomorrow. After the third atomic war, when the Earth was a mass of red radioactive dust, a handful of men and women went deep underground in the struggle for survival. A new civilization was built deep underground, a civilization which must keep a ceaseless vigil against the deadly gamma rays which filter down through the Earth. A civilization where the prime consideration is the genetic survival of the race. It is to this civilization in the year of our Lord, 4195, that we take you now.
Professor Lois Burton?
Yes?
I have a call from the Director of Emotional Stability for the Third Oblong. Go ahead, sir. Hello, darling.
Hello, dear. How is the Director of Emotional Stability? My, how impressive that sounds. Sorry. How are you? You sound tired.
Well, we've had some bad cases. Mostly frantic mothers who insist on imparting their feelings to children. I suspect it's chromosomes affected by gamma ray leakage from the surface, but the head of the psychotechnic division says they're glandular cases. But that isn't why I called. I have good news.
What is it?
The genetic board has approved our application for marriage.
So soon?
Our chromosomes tested perfect. We can marry anytime we want. As a geneticist, you should know that our offspring should be 90 percentile of perfection.
I know.
What's the matter? You are happy about it, aren't you?
Of course. Terribly happy.
I'm coming right over to the lab.
You'll have to give me some time.
What's the trouble?
No trouble. You know that genetic survey I've been working on?
What about it?
Well, I've finally gotten permission to study an actual living case, a specimen of imperfect genetic transmission.
Really?
They're bringing him, or it, up from the condemned cages on the lower level. There's nothing to be afraid of. The specimen is XJ12. It's been studied before many times and is quite well trained. Oh, there's my door signal. I'll have to hang up, darling. See you later. Yes?
Professor Burton?
Yes.
I'm from the Phylogenic Institute.
Oh, you brought my specimen?
May I come in?
By all means. Oh, how...
Horrible. They're all depends on your viewpoint. I happen to have a twisted leg. My parents were genetically unsound.
But then you...
Yes, I am specimen XJ-12.
I see.
I hope you aren't shocked.
No stable person permits feelings to enter into his work. I will admit to surprise. I was expecting something a little more abnormal.
Well, I try to be as abnormal as possible. It pays off. The Phylogenic Institute allows me out of the genetic cages ever so often so I can breathe the pure air of the upper levels and mingle with the genetically perfect.
You seem quite well educated.
I spent the first years of my life here in the upper levels.
How is that possible?
As a small child, my mother concealed me from the director of heredity. My mother actually, dreadful word, loved me.
That would explain your obviously low threshold of emotional control.
If you choose to call it that. You seem to be struggling to repress a few feelings yourself.
We will confine ourselves to the impersonal aspects of our work.
As you please.
I shall require you as a demonstration for a lecture I'm delivering to one of my classes tomorrow.
At your service.
Sit here, please. Grip these electrodes tightly. I'm going to calibrate your electrochemical tension.
I'm quite familiar with the procedure. I realize that as an imperfect, I am expendable, but I should hate to be electrocuted.
The charge is not lethal. Plus 15 surface tension.
You know, you have beautiful hair.
Plus 12 at a depth of 4 centimeters. My hair meets minimal requirements for the genetic code.
Lovely blue eyes. Crystal clear.
Plus 10 at 7 centimeters.
Pretty. A perfect woman. Lovely expressive hands. And a heart of stone. Like all the rest of you perfect survival types.
Shut up.
Could it be you do have feelings?
I seem to sense an air of emotional tension.
It's nothing, dear. This is the specimen.
You, specimen. Tell this dolt who I am, Lewis.
This is the Director of Emotional Stability for the Third Oblong. You will address him as Mr. Director.
Mr. Director.
This creature seems quite impertinent.
He's only a specimen, darling.
Well, use him and ship him back to the cages. He's probably radioactive.
Attention, attention. The next demonstration will be conducted by Professor Lois Burton of the Institute of Genetics. Her topic, the probability of radioactive damage in the chromosome heredity of imperfect non-survival types. Professor Burton.
As you know, most imperfects are destroyed at birth. However, those who, for one reason or another, manage to survive are segregated in cages on the lower level for study purposes. The specimen we have today has been trained to tell in his own words about the factors in his upbringing. You will have to forgive his immature emotional control factor. He is, as you can see, quite different. Specimen XJ-12, you will proceed, please.
Thank you. My mother was a psychotechnician in the Fifth Oblong. My father was an historian specializing in the records of pre-atomic surface culture. In the earthquake of 2170, apparently some hard radiation filtered down through the tunnels and penetrated the Fifth Oblong. The effect on my hereditary factors is quite apparent in this twisted leg. My father taught me in the last days before he was executed that every human personality is born with certain inalienable natural rights. The rights to have feelings, the right to mature, and above all, the right to be different from every other living organism. Because it cannot be otherwise, I submit to you, distinguished students, that the attempt by this society to abridge these rights is a violation of nature. I submit that the imperfects, the mutants, those who are different, have as much right to exist and be free as you. And I say, break open the cages.
Stop him!
Give us back the right to be individuals.
Stop him!
Perhaps that will teach you. Professor Burton, take this specimen back to your laboratory and confine him.
There you go. That's the first portion of X Minus One with Hello Tomorrow from 1956. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. I'm pretty sure you're Lisa Wolf.
I love hearing Bill Curtis say my
name. Oh, my gosh, right? Isn't that awesome?
It really is.
Bill Curtis.
Yeah.
A legend.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute legend. I watched him for so many years on television.
Me too.
And I watch all of his shows that he produces and he hosts. Just great stuff.
His voice, my God.
He's the signature voice of WGN.
Yep. Oh, I thought it was right? You.
Yeah, I'm a legend in my own mind.
Oh, I'm aware of that.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So we're listening to X Minus One. Let's get back now to Hello Tomorrow.
Hold still while I bandage your head.
Oh.
You'll be all right.
I suppose you detest me for getting you into trouble.
I don't detest you.
What?
I don't know why, but as you spoke, something began to stir in me.
Tell me what you feel. If I moved you, then I must have moved the others, some of them at least.
For some reason, I took pride in what you were doing, seeing you stand up against them. Why do you look at me like that?
I can't help it.
I wish you wouldn't. You're only an imperfect, you know. Please.
My name is Oren.
Please.
Say it. Oren.
Oren.
Again.
Oren.
Lois.
Oren.
Lois. Lois. Lois.
How touching.
Walter.
I've been listening for some time.
Walter, how could you?
In my capacity as Director of Emotional Stability, it is my duty.
What are you going to do?
Specimen XJ-12 will be disposed of quite systematically by the state. For the good of the state, for the good of the genetic code, and in the name of emotional stability.
Walter, I have to talk to you.
Go right ahead.
Walter, you mustn't destroy him.
The specimen? Why not?
He's emotionally unstable. You have to expect irrational behavior.
Aren't you forgetting something, my dear? That you were responding in much the same manner?
I...
Or had you forgotten? You see, I'm having him liquidated for your sake. He has an upsetting effect on you.
Then send him back to the cages. But don't kill him.
You speak of destroying an inferior creature as if it was something unethical.
Walter... Walter, please, for my sake.
I understand that you have entered a plea for postponement of marriage at the Records Bureau.
Yes. I was too upset to go through with it.
It came as a great disappointment to me.
I'm sorry.
I was hoping that, linked to a stable personality such as mine, you might settle down. If you were married to me, I might even be persuaded to send him back to the cages instead of having him destroyed. Think it over.
If I refuse?
The choice is yours. Well, my dear?
Perhaps you're right.
I am.
I suppose I ought to be rational about this. After all, he's an imperfect.
I'm glad you've come to your senses.
When can we be married?
Tomorrow, if you like.
The sooner the better.
Let me talk to the custodian, please. Hello, this is the Director of Emotional Stability for the Third Oblong. I would like you to cancel the execution of specimen XJ-12. Turn him over to be remanded permanently to the genetic cages.
You'd better go. I'll pick you up in, say, an hour, and we'll make plans. All right?
Yes. Yes, of course.
Hello. This is the Director of Emotional Stability again. I want you to cancel that last order. Proceed with the execution, but under conditions of absolute secrecy. No, no, don't use the lethal chamber. Take him through the upper level to the tunnels. Yes. Yes, I'll issue a pass for the radiation checkpoint.
Into the elevator.
Very well. Why are we going toward the surface? The cages are on the lower levels.
Radiation check.
I've never done that before.
New procedure. Walk.
Halt. You can't go beyond this point. There is radioactivity in the tunnels.
I have a pass from the Director of Emotional Stability for the Third Oblong. Special mission.
I'll open the airlock.
March inside. Turn around.
So this is how they get rid of the imperfects. Now, before you dispose of me...
Yes?
This...
Help! Security! Security!
What is it? What's happened?
The prisoner struck me. He escaped into the tunnels.
He won't last long.
Can you go after him?
I could send a robot, but it isn't worth the trouble. There's no way back from the tunnels except through here. The only other direction he can go is toward the surface. And the closer he gets, the hotter the radiation. Now, I think you can consider your prisoner officially dead.
Wine?
No, thank you, Walter.
You look very beautiful, my dear. Very beautiful.
Thank you.
The wedding will be a small affair. The director of endocrine control, the chief of the security guard...
Walter?
Yes?
Was he returned to the cages?
Oh, now, why must you spoil it?
Was he, Walter?
Well, as a matter of fact, there was a little difficulty.
Difficulty?
Yes, you see, XJ-12 escaped.
How? Where?
Struck a guard and ran off into the tunnels.
The tunnels? But that's sure death.
He's free to return any time he chooses. Now, don't become upset, darling.
You planned it, didn't you, Walter?
Stability, darling, stability.
Stability, stability. Here's what I think of stability.
State your business.
I'm Professor Burton of the Genetic Institute.
You can't go into the tunnels, Professor.
You'll have to let me by. I'm the fiancé of the Director of Emotional Stability.
Oh, I suppose you're after the one who escaped?
Yes.
He's quite dangerous, I understand.
I'm well armed.
Wouldn't it be better to send a robot?
I'm quite capable of handling him. He was my subject.
All right, miss. It's your risk. Checkpoint.
This is the Director of Emotional Stability.
Yes, sir.
If Professor Burton tries to pass the checkpoint, I want her taken into custody.
Professor Burton just passed, sir. She
you
said that...
idiot.
But, sir, she said that
I
she had...
I don't care what she said. Stop her. Send robots after her. Get her back.
Yes, sir. At once, sir. Robot control. Checkpoint to robot control. Order out all televocal robots into the tunnels. Have them bring back any humans. This is a first priority order.
Where are you, Orin?
Hello?
Orin, it's Lois.
This way, behind the rock. Over here.
Oh, darling, darling.
Lois.
Lois, why did you come here? It's suicide.
I had to. Oh, darling, are you all right?
So far.
You've got to turn back. Give yourself up.
They'll kill me.
You can't stay here. The radiation is +4 at this point. It gets worse as you approach the surface.
Lois, darling, go back.
What will you do?
I'm going ahead.
But you can.
I can. I'm going to the surface.
It's certain death. Not even the robots can survive it.
Well, at least I'll be the first human in 1,100 years to see what the surface of the Earth looks like.
Come back with me.
No, Lois.
Then I'm going with you.
Lois.
Don't try to stop me, darling. There's nothing to go back to now. Nothing but Walter and emotional stability.
You really want to come with me?
Yes.
You know what it means?
I don't care.
My mother used to believe there was a life after death. A place called heaven.
We'll believe it, too.
Oh, no, Lois, I can't let you go.
Lauren, I love you. See, I know how to say it now.
Say it again.
Lauren, I love you.
What is that?
It sounds like... Lauren, it's a robot patrol. They're looking for us.
All right, come on. This way.
Lauren, wait.
It can't be much farther, darling.
The robots. They're coming. I can see their lights now.
Listen, they stopped.
The lights are swinging round. Lauren, they see us.
Come on. Look, Lois, look ahead. You can see the lights reflecting from something.
It looks like a lead door.
Yes. Come on through. Oh, there must be some way to close it. Oh, yes, here.
Let me help.
Well, they won't get through that. It's solid lead.
Lauren, I feel so strange. Where are we?
I don't know.
Look, up there, a huge round light.
Lois.
Yes, Lauren.
Lois, that's Luna, the moon. We're on the surface.
How strange and red everything looks. How it glows.
It's the radioactivity.
Quiet and peaceful. And deadly.
Oh, hush, darling, hush. Sit here and rest a while.
Put your arm around me.
Yes.
Lauren. Lauren, I'm afraid. Lauren, we're going to die.
Don't think about that. Just think about us. Alone. The first humans to stand on the surface of Earth in 1,100 years. That door must have been placed there by the last handful of survivors who went underground after the atomic wars.
And those other lights, the small ones... They must be stars. Orin, I'm so tired.
Go to sleep, darling. Put your head on my shoulder and sleep.
Hold me, Orin. Hold me very close. Orin.
Hmm?
Orin, wake up.
Hmm? What?
Look, what? It's light. The whole universe is light. Oh, Orin, how beautiful. Look.
This must be the heaven my mother talked about.
See the plants? All green and fresh. And the birds. How strange they look.
Lois, this isn't heaven.
But we must be dead, Orin. We should be dead. The radiation.
By all the laws of nature, yes.
By all the laws of nature. Orin.
Mm.
Orin, we're not dead. This is Earth. And we're alive. We're not going to die.
But, Lois, the radiation, it's present. You can see its effects.
Orin, did you ever hear of geotropism?
I'm not a geneticist.
There is a natural law of adaptation by which an organism will try to adjust itself to its environment by changing. It's called geotropism, don't you see?
No.
All these generations, we've been bombarded by radiation filtering down through the Earth. Each successive generation must have inherited some degree of immunity.
But...
Orin, it can't hurt us. Don't you see? We're immune. We're probably the first generation to inherit sufficient immunity.
But darling, if that's true, then we can transmit that immunity. We can pass it along to our children.
And they to their children. Come on. We'll have to find food and water.
The practical wife. Wait a minute.
What are you doing with that rock?
I want to scratch something on the outside of this lead door.
Lois and Orin.
4195 A.D.
Hello, tomorrow.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. It was an original story by George Lefferts, starring Jan Miner and John Larkin, and directed by Daniel Sutter. Next week, A Gun for Dinosaur by L. Sprague de Camp on X-1. This is the NBC Radio Network.
That guy was very authoritative, wasn't he? This is the NBC Radio Network.
That's how you speak, too,
yeah.
You know, with authority,
like,
and confidence.
Gun for Dinosaur next week.
I think people sit up and listen to you when you speak
like
that.
Very authoritative.
Maybe you should try it.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll work for you.
Think so?
Yeah.
I don't have that. I can't do that.
I know. That's why you should try it. Give it a shot.
All right, Jimmy.
I'm going to try to sit up and listen.
Should I try it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was X-1, February 29th, 1956. Hello Tomorrow, starring Jan Miner and John Larkin.
Okay, I'm thinking, I'm away from authoritative, more like, I don't know if I can say it on the air, so I don't want to say it.
Oh, don't say it.
No, I'm not going to. It's more like a guy who is not...
Trying too hard?
No, I'd say you're not a good guy.
Oh, like I sound like a bad guy. That's what I would have been in the golden age of radio if I was an actor back then. I would always been the bad
guy.
I would have talked like this.
That's your one trick pony.
I would have made it. I would have been always the
guy. Like the bad guy.
I would have been the go-to guy. Like, you know, when the producers were, you know, if it was a crime show, pick that Carl Amari guy because he talks like this.
Right. You know, there's a lot of one trick ponies though that out there that are very successful. Look at, I know people may not disagree with me, but like I think Matthew McConaughey, he's always the same.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I think he's a one trick pony. He's always the same in absolutely everything.
Well, not in the one he won the Academy Award in there. You know that movie, which what was the name of that movie where he played the AIDS victim?
Oh, I didn't see that movie, so I can't comment on it.
I mean, he lost so much.
Yes, he did. He lost a lot of weight
for that, and he was amazing in it. And he was a different guy in that.
I have to say, I did not see that movie, so I can't.
But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
he plays the good-looking,
cool
guy with the taking his shirt off all the time.
Exactly.
Of course, if I had a body like him, I'd take my shirt off in the movies too.
You just keep your shirt on.
I'm going to keep my shirt on.
And your shoes too.